Hello, this is Gideon Rothstein, and this is the response of the day for the 16th of Tammuz, the day before Shiva Super Tammuz. And today we have a response from Rabbi Israel Hildesheimer, an important German Rav of the mid to late 19th century. This is Shut Rabbi Israel Hildesheimer, Chelek Aleph, the first volume, the Orach Chaim, section Simon Samach Tet, response number 69. It is dated the 16th of Tammuz of Tuf Reish Chaf Hei of 1865. It's written by Rabbi Reuven Fink. Well, there's a Reuven Fink today, but I don't think he was living back then. So the question, which is really, I think, probably the question is what was dated to the 16th of Tammuz, the answer is not dated. So I think we can just use it in our cases, and if that's cheating, I apologize. So this Reuven Fink is writing to the Rabbi Israel Hildesheimer. He says, because I saw what you wrote in the Israelite in the 1865 volume, so one of those like Torah journals, I guess, about if you have metal utensils, let's say a metal pot or a metal dish, who have a glass covering. So glass covering can either mean like a full glass covering, but it often can mean like a glaze. We're going to talk about in the response, we're going to have to get to the question of whether glazing is slightly different. And that comes up today as well. It comes up today, for example, the question of glazed china. So you have china, which halachically is treated as klicheres, which means that if something non-kosher happens to it, we can't have a way of kashering, you just have to break and destroy it. And then you have a question of whether the glazing changes it and makes it more like it's covered in glass. And then the question is, what is covering glass doing? That's what we're going to get. So the questioner, this Reuven Fink, is responding to an article by Rabbi Israel Hildesheimer, who had responded to an article by Rabbi David Deutsch, and so this guy wants to talk to him about it. So this Rabbi David Deutsch had said that let's say you have something happen, you have a metal plate with a glaze on it, let's say some kind of metal that has some kind of a glaze, it's some kind of a glass covering, and something happens that should theoretically render it non-kosher to the plate from the outside. He says, well, the Shulchan Aruch holds in Shulchan Aruch. It's actually, I would have thought, kashrus issues are generally in Yoredeya, but these sets of kashrus issues are in Orach Chaim Tofnin Aleph in the context of Hilchos Pesach. When you talk about kashering utensils, one of the places that we allow ourselves to kasher things regularly is for Pesach. So that's where a lot of it comes up. So, and that's where the Shulchan Aruch deals with these kinds of questions. So the Shulchan Aruch holds, this guy pointed out, Shulchan Aruch holds that glass doesn't absorb halachically. And since glass doesn't absorb, it can't get non-kosher. But the Ramah disagreed. However, says the questioner, this Reuven Fink, in the name of this Rabbi Deutsch, says that the Ramah disagrees because b'di'eved, I'm sorry, the Ramah disagrees, but b'di'eved, if it happened to it, the Ramah says you can do Hagalah. Now, the reason why that's surprising is that those who think that glass is a problem treat it like it might be considered cheres, clay, because they have similar origins. The glass is made from, also from sand that's turned eventually into glass, however it happens, and clay also is made from sand, so since they have the same origins, you might think they have the same mechanics or chemistry of absorbing and getting rid of matters of Isser. So you might have thought if you're going to treat glass like Kli Cheres, like it's a clay kind of a thing, that we would also say you can't kosher through Hagalah, through putting boiling water into it. The Ramah does agree that you can do Hagalah to glass. If that's true, then it seems like at least b'di'eved, at least once something's gotten non-kosher, then we should be able to do it. So this guy who's writing to the Rizul Hildesheimer says, our kelim are all like a b'di'eved, so it should at least be okay with Hagalah. And that would be a big boon, because there are those who seem to have held that you can't do it with Hagalah. Then he says, after b'hituch z'chuchit, severely the mechaber. So the problem with saying that, you just rely on the mechaber says that glass doesn't absorb. However, the mechaber does say in Sif Chav Gimel, Toftan Aleph Sif Chav Gimel, that a clay pot or pan or plate or whatever it would be that's got a covering of glass, so that you treat like a klicheres. So it's an odd, we're going to talk about it, because it's an odd psak of the Shulchan Aruch. The Shulchan Aruch, three paragraphs later, says that things made completely of glass don't absorb at all. So here he's saying that if it's got a glazing of glass, you have to treat it like a klicheres, you have to treat it like the underlying klicheres, the underlying clay pot. So a man writing to Rizu Hildesheimer says, you'd have to say like what the Rosh said in Perek Kol Shah, in the Gemara, on the Gemara, that, so the man let's remember, this is still a quote of the man who wrote the original article that's written by David Deutsch. And the Hillel had responded to that article. So then this man is going to respond to that. So the man who had written the article said, you have to say about it like the Russian, he gave an answer, whatever it was. Doesn't matter so much to us. So this man now writing to this Fink, writing to Rabbi Hildesheimer, says, besides what you wrote, he didn't say you because everybody's polite in these letters, even though they're slamming each other. He says, I'm surprised at both of you because it seems like that it wasn't that. It seems like you treat it as if the Rush was the only one who talked about that issue. But I think that you look at the Tosas in Ksubas Kuv Zayanam and Beis, he says, where I think what Tosas says is, their Terutz is, my understanding is their Terutz is, there's their. He says, but I think the answer, the Tosfos there is, that there's a difference between full-on glass items, a glass plate, a glass pot, whatever it is that you make of glass, those are nitbashel kol tzorcho. They've been fully made into glass. And once they're fully made into glass, they have a complete constitution of glass. I think Tosfos says they don't absorb anything. But when you have a glazing, this man is suggesting, or this Reuven Fink is suggesting, when you have a glazing, so that's not fully made. It's too. He doesn't mean it's too thin. What he really means, I think, is the process of glazing, of getting a glaze of glass onto something else, makes the glass less glassy than real glass, than regular glass. That's the way he's understanding that Tosfot in Ketubot. And therefore, since it comes out of sand that was originally made with sand, it hasn't been completely converted from sand into glass, and therefore it still has the qualities, the same qualities that make us think that clay cheresh, that the clay items, that vessels made of clay are always absorb and can't ever have a gula, and that's why you have the problem there. It's not yet really, for all that we'll call it a glass glazing, it's not halachically turned enough into glass to have the qualities of glass. So if that's true, there should be no difference between whether that glass is glazed onto cheres, onto clay, or whether that glass is glazed onto metal. It should be that the glass itself has the qualities of clay, and therefore the hagala shouldn't work. So even according to the opinion, as the Shulchan seems to follow this idea that he's about to say, even according to the opinion that will say that glass, full-on glass items don't absorb anything, but if the glass glaze, we say that they absorb, and then once they absorb, the other aspect of kli cheres that's relevant here, of clay that's relevant here, is that once it's absorbed, we don't think it ever fully gets rid of it, right? That's why you can't kosher, forget glass for a second, if I have a, and this comes up in pottery and it comes up in China, if I have a clay pot and I cook stuff in it and something goes wrong and it gets non-kosher, the halacha is, for all that it was cooked, that you can't kosher it. You can't kosher it by boiling it in water. So usually when we have pots and pans that we cook things in, we cook them with water, meaning not the stuff that we stick into the oven. We cook things on the stove, we boil water in it. Usually the way to kosher it is to boil clean water, wait 24 hours, and boil it all filled with water, and that takes it out. With clay, that doesn't work, because we think that it never really relieves itself of all that it absorbed. So theoretically, you could do libun to it, but we worry that people won't do a real libun to it, because they'll be afraid of breaking it, and therefore clay is a whole big problem for koshering. You usually have to break it, and then, you know, if you, the only solution is to take the clay shards, put them back into a kiln, reform them into you know, liquid clay, and then redo it. So it's a complicated process. So, and that, he's saying, should be true of the glass glazing as well. If what we're saying about glass glazing is that it's not fully made into clay yet, into glass yet, then it retains all of its qualities as clay, and therefore it should be no different, and it shouldn't make a difference either as to whether it's a glazing over clay or glazing over metal. It should be that the glazing itself absorbs and never relieves itself completely of absorption through Hagala, and therefore it should be a problem. And then he's suggesting that even those authorities, like the Daki Moshe, the Magen Avraham, who said the B'dieved, that it, once it's been done, you can do Hagala to it. They shouldn't say it about a glass glazing. They should only say it about glass. Meaning, we started off by saying, we're talking about glazing over metal. And I think the opinion he's responding to was, if you have glazing over metal, then you shouldn't be able to do Hagala on it, even if it gets non-kosher. Why? Because the Shulchan Aruch holds, this man was saying, the Shulchan Aruch holds that glazing doesn't absorb, and even if you can hold that it absorbs, but the evidence, it can be done with Hagala. That's what the Magen Avraham is. So this man, this Reuven Fink, is saying, I think that's untrue. That's only about actual glass. But glazing isn't like that. Glazing is like, now that's the question. He's saying glazing should be like clay and sand, and therefore you should have a problem, even according to those who said you could do Hagala B'dieved, you should have a problem. He says, and while I'm talking about this, it seems to me He says, once I'm on the topic of, once I'm on this topic, he says, I want to express my surprise at, he says, Me'or Eneinu HaMaharsha, at the light of our eyes, the Maharsha, which is an interesting reminder to me. I was growing, when I grew up, and this makes us say something about the yeshivas that I went to, about the particular strand of Torah learning that I got myself involved with, but we didn't use the Maharsha that often. The Maharsha was, you know, we all knew about it. The Maharsha was there in the back of the book, and we knew that people used it, but we didn't use it that often. It wasn't, and it didn't seem like we suffered that much for it. And but here, and I think there's another, I just recently saw a tshuva, I think, of the Rav Yaakov Etlinger in the Binyan Sion. Oh, no, I saw an Aruch Lanier in Makos, who made it very clear that he used the Maharsha regularly in his learning. Also, you know, a German acronym of the 19th century, that Maharsha was very, very important to them. And it reminded me of a story that I heard many years ago from Rabbi Dr. Chaim Soloveitchik, who was my teacher for a long time. Rabbi Dr. Chaim Soloveitchik, who pointed out that many of the Rishonim that that I had commonly used when I was in yeshiva, Rishonim like the Ramban, the Rashba, weren't available to people in the 19th century. They weren't; they just weren't out there. You knew their names. You knew they were important because they were quoted in the Beis Yosef for the Torah. You accessed them through other sources, but you didn't really know them. But the Maharsha, I think it was the Maharsha that he said, worked out the Maharsha and the Maharshal worked out many of the issues that were in the Rishonim that you didn't have access to in the Rishonim, and they sort of redid them. So that much of Torah learning in a time when you didn't have a lot of Sfarim relied on these sources. The Maharsha, when he says Morinenu, it's really Morinenu because it was really central to their Torah learning that they made use of the Maharsha. So the Maharsha seems to be, this is what he says, the Maharsha seems to understand that the difference between zechuchit, between glass, and between hituch zechuchit, the glazing of glass, is matzah minas mina. So I looked it up because I didn't understand from that what he meant by the Maharsha. I looked at the Maharsha, this is Maharsha in Avodah Zarah. The topic is an item called a kunya. This is what the Tosos in two places in Avodah Zarah, we're going to get back to it because this is going to be part of Israel Hultesheimer's response to this fellow. The Tosos, in discussing what a kunya is in two boat or in Avodah Zarah, so that's the topic at hand. So the Maharsha says that if you have a covering of metal, so you don't say that it's enough to cover. If you have metal covering a clay pot, so is that enough to say that we can say we treat it like metal, or do we have to treat it like the clay underneath? So you might have thought theoretically that whatever's going to be absorbed is only absorbed into the metal, and with metal we know we can kosher metal by either boiling it or you're doing libun on it, whatever it is, right? Hagala or libun. So would that be good enough? So the answer is we say no. And that's because we think that the absorption goes through the metal into the clay, and then when it's time to come out by other heating process, it'll come out as well. But that wouldn't be true, says the Maharsha, about a chipui zechuchit al cheres. Sorry. But, and with glass, he says, once it's full on glass, then it doesn't absorb anything. But with a chipoy, with a covering of glass on clay, he says, kivan shehu mino, since it's of the same type of thing, because it was originally from sand, so therefore it'll definitely absorb. So meaning, this man had been suggesting that maybe the difference between glass and a glazing of glass was the glazing of glass isn't as fully formed as it needs to be. Whereas the Maharsha, and this is what he's expressing surprise at, the Maharsha says, the reason why the glazing of glass is a problem is because they're sort of related to each other. So he's unclear. He thinks that's a very strange thing. He says, V'tiyavi Maharsha Allah siyat l'divri harav anal dischuchit mitzupel matchot kil tve. That would imply that if you have a glazing of glass on metal, it should be more of a het there. Right, because that's the point. If we're going to say that glass, a glazing of glass absorbs and does it absorbs, then you might think to yourself that, well, when it's on metal, it should be okay because I can kosher it. Whatever I do, what do? I have a glass glazing on metal. If it was a pot that I cooked on the stove, I can boil water in it, and that should be okay because why wouldn't it be okay? Either the glass doesn't, that's what the man had said, either the glass doesn't absorb, or if it absorbs, then it also releases because it's only a glass on the metal, and that's what he was claiming. So this man, this Reuven Fink, says, after the kissing the dirt of the Maharsha, it's an expression of our deep reverence. And it's an important balance that a lot of people miss, right? The balance between reverence and willingness to argue with. I can have real reverence and meaningful reverence and sincere reverence, and yet also feel like I have to argue sometimes. So after kissing his dirt. He says he thinks that the words of the Tosfos and Avodah Zarah are really the same as Tosfos and Ketubos, and the Tosfos says things clearly in some, you know, more clearly in one place than in another place. But that even in Avodah Zarah, he thinks, if you look at the Tosfos and Avodah Zarah the Maharsha was commenting on, you can see a hint of it there, because what they write there is, Lekach perish b'netam kunya kituch zuchid shalonit pashel kol tzarcho. Right? He mentions the word lonit pashel kol tzarcho, and he thinks that's sort of referencing what was later going to be said in Ketubot, or what was said in a different Tosfot in Ketubot. And therefore, he ends up thinking that he doesn't think the Tosfos in two places justifies the kula that this man had said, that if you have a hitu iskruchin, then you can treat it like the metal underneath and you can do hagalana. He thinks if you have a hitu iskruchin, it stays clay, is what this man is saying. It stays to have the properties of clay, that it can't be kashed at all. So that's where the questioner stands. The questioner had seen a kula. The Vizil had responded to that kula. We don't even know what he had said fully. But this man thinks that when it comes to glazing, you have to treat it like full-on clay, and that will be a real problem because the glass is not fully formed. So Rizil Hildesheimer disagrees, and he thinks that this man is building too much off of one Tosfos, because he says, if you look at all the places he quotes, he says, Lanez date kashal ozer v'nafal azur, which is a pasuk in Yeshayahu Lamed Aleph, and it's a reminder, Lamed Aleph Gimel 31:3, it's a reminder that some people used to know Tanakh in a way that they can make use of phrases, sort of rolled around in their heads, and when they were writing, they would include those phrases, because if you look at the words of Rabbeinu Tam and all the places they're quoted, he always talks about a klicheres ha-metsupe b'zuchuchit. He always talks about a klicheres, a clay pot that is covered in glass, and that's how the Aruch has it, and the Shulchan Aruch has it, and all the poskim, and they mention it that way, he thinks, because it was relevant to that consideration, because it was as the Maharsha had said, it was a factor in our understanding of the workings of this glass. So he says, you know, you put all of your efforts into this one Tosfos, whereas I think that the whole point was that since it's covering Cheres, it's covering clay, that's the way that it reacts that way. But when it's covering other things, even though it's just a glaze and not a full-on glass, it might have other characteristics. And if you see two tools that seem to contradict, but we have a Rabbeinu Tam that says things very clearly, then we have to adjust things to understand it that way. And therefore, we'll answer this question. We have to have two prior things to make clear. First, clay zechuchit gamor eino nivlad. Let's assume that if you have a full-on glass item, it's been fully made as glass, then it doesn't absorb things. And then v'gam tfei. So why do they change the language of v'gam tfei? Why don't they just say kunya bala tfei? So therefore he thinks that Tosfos thinks that in fact full on glass doesn't absorb anything, and the only question is when you have a pot of some sort, some item that has been covered in glass, so they think, he's claiming, he reveals, says he thinks that the glass absorbs more in that situation, meaning not only does it absorb, but it also tends, the next time it encounters something in heat, it'll also have a strong element of exuding that out to other things. So while you can maybe kasha the kunya Begagal, or whatever the kunya is, but it'll depend on what comes after that or what's upon it, and if it's cheres, you can't think. And that would explain the Maharsha as well. So that's his fundamental response. So this is a complicated set of issues, but it lets us sort of start thinking about some of the issues that come up with absorption, not absorption, understanding the principles of it based on what Tosfos understood, what the Maharsha understands, and things like that. So here you have the complications of glass and how we treat glass in halacha, which becomes a very important question in our days when there's a lot of things that are glazed. And if you have glazed china, the china's underneath. So that would be, according to these things, we would assume that the glazing would be a problem that would be more like the question of kunya, and therefore there'd be more room to think that both A, it would absorb, and B, it would cause other things to be a problem, and it would be the kind of thing that you can't kosher. Today, I think there are people who kosher glazed china and say that you can treat the glazing more fully like glass. And to some extent, that would seem to imply, to the extent that we're saying, see, if it's a question of matzah minus mino, that the glass sort of finds the clay and they share characteristics, then an improved process wouldn't necessarily help with that. But if it was more like what this man had been writing to Rizal Hildesheimer, there's a question of that we don't think the glazing sort of completes the process. That would mean glazing over metal, the glass can be treated more like metal because it's just that the glazing has made full-on glass. Then if glazing and improved over time, you might argue that, no, glazing today is different. That's really the full-on glass that has the same halacha as glass everywhere else in halacha, which would be this machloket we saw earlier at the very beginning between the Shulchan Aruch and the Rambam. So there would be some questions about glazing and how glazing does or doesn't work and how it affects our kashrus issues. I do know I had a teacher once who wasn't, he was a math teacher, but also an active person trying to help people become more Jewish and more involved in Judaism. And he worked in a place where there were a lot of kids who were from non-kosher homes who would decide at some point to make their homes kosher. And he told me he once had a kid like that, and he used to tell them, listen, I rely on a leniency. That means you don't have to break your china, right? If you've been eating non-kosher all your life and you've been using china, glazed china, so if you have to break it, that could be a barrier. People, they would say to themselves, I'm not going to spend all that money on a new set of china just so I can become kosher, and therefore become a barrier. And therefore he held, you can rely on this leniency that if the china is glazed, you don't have to treat it like china. You can treat it like glass and think that it's not bolea, and therefore you don't have a problem with it, and you can work with it. That was what he held. I'm not saying right or wrong. I'm just saying that was what he held. But he told me one time, he says this to a kid. Kid says, fine. He comes to the house. It's all new china. So he says to the mother, he says, I said, you didn't have to break your china. She says to him, what? Did you think I was going to kosher my house and not get a new set of china out of the process? So that's one of the areas that comes up with the question of glazing. Okay, we have a bunch of extra time, and I want to leave all that extra time empty. I don't know what you probably wouldn't know what to do with your days if you didn't have this to listen to. So I want to make sure that we spend, there's a short tshuva in the Shu'at Shevet HaLevi, Shmuel HaLevi Vosner, from the 16th of Tammuz of Tavshin Nun Tet of 1989. So I can do it very briefly, and we'll still have a bunch of extra time for today. He has a relative who's a great Rav, who's the head of a certain place, and in his place, they had a cemetery, and there was a certain man who was a well-respected man. He was a Kaddish, he was a holy man, a significant Torah scholar maybe, but they made a small ohel, a small tent over his grave, and then after a while, somebody came along and built a bigger ohel. And over that bigger ohel, that bigger covering included other graves. And then over time, people come to gather at the grave of this great man, this man they think of as a kadosh, as a holy man, and they pray there, they have minyanim there, tefillas hatzibur, they read the Torah there, and now it's getting so many people are coming to do it, it's become a common thing, it's become a popular thing to do. So the person is asking the question, can they build the ohel further? Can they cover up other graves with the ohel? That's the question. So in other words, the questioner takes for granted, of course it's fine to have the ohel, to have the covering. Of course it's fine to have davening there. Of course it's fine to have Kriyas HaTorah there. They just want to know, are they allowed to expand it? So Rav Vosner says, the Rambam in Hilchos Avel, in the 14th chapter of the Laws of Mourning, in the 13th paragraph, the 13th halakha there says, you shouldn't walk within 4 amot of a grave when you're wearing tefillin, or you're holding a Sefer Torah. And you're not supposed to daven within 4 amot. This is not with a tzibur, not with a minion. No daven at all within 4 amot of a grave, and that's brought lahalach in Yoredeh at the end of Shin Samach Zayin and Shin Samach Chet. It says that in the very beginning of Shin Samach Chet, it says that the cemetery, you're not allowed to treat it lightly. You don't like laugh and joke in a cemetery because it's a serious place. And the Ramah there says, you don't learn Torah there, and you don't, right? You don't learn Torah there, and you don't read the Torah there. And when there's a Gemara in Tan in Tadzayin Amar Aleph, which says, in the Gemara that says, why do people go out to Beit HaKvaro, to cemeteries on Ta'anesim, on public fast days? So that to ask the deceased to ask for us, for ask for mercy for us. That's a whole complicated issue of itself. But the Ritva there says, clearly it doesn't mean to pray there, because you can't pray in a Beit HaKfarot. And all this is because of the principle of what's called Lo'eg LaRosh. Lo'eg LaRosh is a pasuk of Tanakh. Lo'eg LaRosh, Harif will say who? I think it's in Mishle. So it is. It's in Mishle, Paragut Zion, chapter 17, verse 5. Lo'eg LaRosh, Harif will say who? So Lo'eg LaRosh, Harif will say who? This literally means, if you laugh at a poor person, then you're really mocking, or you're really embarrassing Hashem. You're reviling Hashem. You're sort of throwing insults at Hashem by mocking this person. So that's true about the poor in the literal context, but it's taken halachically to include the deceased who are poor in the sense that they can no longer keep mitzvahs. So in Yoredeh, Shimon Mendalad, Taz in the Shach, Rav Ozner says, Divrei Torah, you can't even learn outside of the Dalet Amos, if as long as you're within a cemetery. And then they point out that Mordechai says that under a covering, under a roof, in a house, is considered always like you're within the four Amos. So Rav Ozner says, I don't even understand. So you're in a basic forest, you build this OL, and then you have davening there, and you have Kriyas HaTorah there. You couldn't do it within four Amos of the cemetery, let alone of a particular grave. And if it's all got a house over it, then you can't do it there. And the Ritvu says that you wouldn't daven, so clearly he wasn't saying you can't go out to the graves to this, but of course you can pray there. Le'ilui nishmas ha'nikbarim u'letovatam. You can pray for their benefit, for their souls should be uplifted in heaven, whatever those words mean, and for their benefit. But the Ritvu just says that they would go out there, they would pray. He thinks they would pray not there, they would pray the Tanis davening that you have, a special davening for Tanis, but they couldn't do it right there because you're not, he thinks it's not allowed, the Ritva says, to do it at the cemetery itself. I think that's what he's saying. But he says, whatever you can say about davening, maybe you even say that davening's allowed, Kriyas HaTorah is certainly not allowed. Right? So now they've made, and now that they've made this OL and it's covering a whole bunch of graves, so then it's got to be that the people davening there are standing within four Amos of graves, right? Especially since they're under one covering, under one roof. And therefore, and why are we looking for kulas for all of this? All of this is against what Chazal wanted, what the poskim think, and therefore this whole idea he thinks is a problem. The whole idea that they expanded the OL, the covering, and they included other graves without people knowing about it, without them agreeing to it, he thinks that's against halacha. So that is, he thinks it's against halacha for a very interesting reason that we've seen on other occasions, which is that the whole idea of putting a marker on a grave was so that people should know who's who, and they should know not to put people with different levels of relation with Hashem next to each other, right? There's halacha we've spoken about before, other tshuvos, that you can't put Russia, you can't put an evildoer near a righteous person, but it happens to be if somebody's like a chassid gadol, somebody's extraordinarily good, you're not even supposed to put a regular tzaddik near them. So when you bury the person in their own grave, presumably they picked a grave that was in the right place for them, and the people around them were all okay. But then when you made this OL and you put and you expanded the OL, it's easily plausible that you're now including under that OL, under that covering, graves of people who shouldn't be included with this great person who started out, and therefore you're violating this halacha. So basically, the man writes the Rav Ozner with one question, and the answer he gets is a completely different answer, which is this whole thing is a problem, and the whole idea you want to know if you can expand it to make more room for the minyanim. I think the whole problem is an issue. The whole issue is a problem. You can't be expanding it at all, and you can't be davening there, and you can't be having Sefer Torah, Kriyas HaTorah there. So for the 16th of Tammuz, we have one relatively longer tshuva about the question of how we treat glass as opposed to glass glazing, and another one about the mistakes we can make about how we treat the deceased in cemeteries, in terms of davening there and reading the Torah there, from Rav Ozner. With thanks to the OU, to Rabbi Jacob Bromwich, David Hochhauser. Have a great day.